Welcome to this very special edition of the KJ Masterclass Live, the show which ensures that you profit from your time spent here with experts, either through their industry insights, information, or simply learning from them. And today we have Dr. Jennifer Nash. She's a leadership consultant, author of the award-winning and best-selling book, Be Human, Lead Human, and CEO of Jennifer Nash Coaching and Consulting. Welcome to the show, Dr. Jennifer.
Thank you so much for having me, AJ. I'm thrilled to be here today.
You are welcome to the show, Dr. Jennifer. You are welcome to India in this online form. And I'm sure not just in India, but a lot of people across the globe will benefit from what we are going to talk about. We are talking right now. We'll be talking about how to be a more human leader. So my first question to you, Dr. Jennifer Nash, is to understand, you talk about human leadership. What is this human leadership? Are there, you know, non-humans also in leadership? I think when we talk of non-humans, they perform better leadership functions. But let's talk about the human leadership. What does human leadership actually mean?
Yeah, so, you know, I get this question a lot. So human leadership is obviously where we're leading humans in the workplace. But let's talk about that a little bit more, because it's actually an invitation to think about how you think about and practice leadership differently in this new world of work. So in the past, right, we had leaders that were commanding and controlling and telling people what to do and micromanaging. And, you know, today that doesn't necessarily work so well. You know, people saw during the pandemic, they can drive their own work, right? They can be autonomous. They can have a voice and a choice in how and where and when they work. And so today, for leaders to be more human in their approach to work, it means that the leaders themselves need to show up as, you know, vulnerable and courageous, authentic human beings. They need to treat the people around them as humans and give them the agency and the autonomy that they need to do their best work in a changed world.
Right, right, Dr. Jennifer. So why are these humans behaving in a non-different, you know, in an indifferent way? I would not call them non-humans, but why do they behave the way that we have to discuss it here? Why is it so? What makes them? Are they bad human beings inherently, or is it because they think differently, which is actually, you know, perceived as something not good in today's time? Then why do they do something which is not good at all?
So, AJ, I think the question is around why are the leaders behaving like they used to behave before COVID, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. So, you know, that's what they're used to, right? They learned that behavior. They grew up looking and watching and role modeling that behavior from the people who came before them. So I wouldn't say that there is anything wrong with these people, right? They're not bad people. They just have some behaviors and some thinking that perhaps needs to shift and change to be a little more effective in today's world of work, you know, and helping people grow and evolve while they're in work. I like to say often that, you know, organizations today are places where people need to grow, they need to evolve, they need to learn. And so that is a little bit different from before, where organizations were viewed as just a place where people would go to work and do their work and then they would go home. And there wasn't any element of, you know, humans growing and evolving at the same time.
Right, right, Dr. Jennifer. So I want to understand, is there a compulsion for them to behave in that particular manner which led to this great resignation, quiet quitting, still very much on? Why is it so? Is it that they come from a different, because earlier, if you say that they learned all these things from people before them, I think earlier on we had great leaders, even in corporate leadership. I don't know which book they read that they have to be. Or is it the impact of the present social culture or social media or everything else that is there? And this is because nobody teaches to behave badly. So I want to understand then, where have they learned it? Is there a manual somewhere, hidden manual, which we do not know of, but some of these leaders actually get their hands on that manual?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, you know, there is no manual, like you say, right? And actually leaders, when they get tapped on the head and promoted into a people leadership role, it's typically 15 years before they get some kind of training in how to lead people, right? So typically what's happening is someone gets put into this role of managing or leading a person. They don't have the people leadership tools in their toolkit to lead the people. So what do? Well, they end up leading people with the same project and task tools that they use. And that doesn't work because you can't lead humans with the same tools that you use to lead projects and tasks. So it requires a whole new toolkit. It requires a whole new set of skills. And oftentimes they just don't have that in their toolkit. But what they end up using is what they see the leaders before them use. And today, in today's workplace, because we've evolved, that doesn't work so well anymore. And that's why you see people continuing to leave organizations. You see attrition that are very high attrition rates. And you see this consistent, great resignation or quiet quitting happening.
Right. So what is the solution here? Do you think, they can make that course correction in their mindset? Or is it that, is it something else? Or maybe that they find that if they try to be more good with people, then people also, or certain employees, they take advantage of that. They consider them as weak. And certain employees may just want this sort of, some sort of a so-called strong leadership. And that works better for, so they get the wrong messaging. And both sides are now, after this, are getting the wrong sort of messaging. And the real good people are actually, are suffering in the background. I both from both the leadership side, as well as from the employee side. Help us understand this side of the things.
Yes. So I think there's a couple reasons why leaders stay with the behaviors that they are used to, right? First and foremost, as human beings, we don't like change. We like things to stay the same. We're comfortable with the status quo. And actually, our brains are always working to put us in that state of being safe, of being comfortable, of understanding where we are and knowing what we're doing. And so when you introduce change into that, it makes people very uncomfortable. And so our brains are instantly trying to work to get to that, back to that place of safety, if you will. So that's one reason why, we're still stuck with these behaviors. So I would say that some leaders, they are more open to change. They are more open to thinking differently about how they practice leadership. And they are open to thinking a little bit differently about what that role of a leader actually looks like in today's world. I invite people to think about the fact that a leader today really is a coach and facilitator rather than a commander and controller. There's someone that comes in, they help the team, evolve and grow into the human beings that they are meant to be. At the same time, they are matching the work that people are doing to the purpose that the people have that's important to them. And so they tie that together. And when they do that, that is actually the secret of how you stop the stem of attrition, how you stop the flood of people leaving the organization.
Right. One more thing I wanted to understand from you, Dr. Jennifer, is that are we, taking all leadership together? And actually, this whole problem has started with the people in more on tech companies. And, especially with those people who were much more younger, trying to be much more, rash, or try to be much more open, try to be much more cool. And that gave an impression that leadership itself is in crisis. How do you see that? Because a lot of times when there are troubles, you see those companies or those leaderships, they have this tech sort of a background. So should we separate these two things, or is it that, the challenges are in all sorts of, or it has, actually come down to all sorts of leadership, but actually it is more in tech companies? Help us understand this aspect of, should we differentiate or should we not look at it at all that way?
So I think we want to be careful about ascribing certain characteristics more to one industry than another. I think that overall, we experience leaders in all different industries that are struggling with this. And there are leaders in all industries who are also doing well, and making it work for themselves and for their people and for their organizations. And so those leaders, you don't see them in the news, right? Because everything's working pretty well for them. What typically happens is you'll see something that breaks headline news because, you know, something about that situation was so maybe inhumane in a way that, you know, it caused people to want to pay attention to that. And sometimes those things go viral. But I would say overall, you know, there isn't necessarily a correlation between one industry and the degree to which their leaders are less equipped to lead than others.
Right, right, Dr. Jennifer. So let's look at the solutions. How do we, where is that solution? Is it again in some hidden book, or is it in your book? Help us understand how you have tackled this issue in your book, how to be human, be human, lead human, how to connect people and performance. Help us with the golden nuggets that you have in that book. Who is that book for? What do you have in that book?
Yes. So the book, Be Human, Lead Human, How to Connect People and Performance, is a masterclass in how to lead people for this new world of work. So it's an invitation to think about and practice leadership differently. And if you're in a space where you need to put some tools in your toolkit, it will help you do that through what I call the humans framework that is in the book. So the humans framework is a set of tools that help leaders address the universal human needs that we all have, right? Regardless of where we sit on the hierarchy, regardless of where we are in geography, regardless of our religion, our race, our background, anything, these human needs are all common to what we want and need to perform at our best. And so using that humans framework is one of the first tools that leaders can use to help them change their leadership and be more effective in today's world of work.
Right, right. So what I want a bit more detail for the people. Why should one buy that book? What have they got? As I said, is it only for the leaders, or even employees who would be future leaders can read this book? What is it? Because it's a very difficult subject. You can't take either one side. You have to take balance it out. And it is a very difficult job because leadership itself is in crisis. Either it is the top leadership or the middle leadership or even a simple manager. So I want to understand what is it that they can learn from your book. All sets of people who are into any sort of leadership role.
Yes. So I would say that this book is actually applicable for many different people, and I'll help you understand why. So if you are an early career professional and you are entering your first job in the workplace, this book is fantastic for you to help you understand how to communicate with people, how to build relationships with people, you know, how to, you know, gain some of those tools that you're going to need to collaborate and work effectively in teams to help you drive your career success. If you are an experienced leader, this book is an invitation for you to think about how you are practicing leadership today and think about what could be possible and what the results could be differently if you were to practice leadership with the tools that are in this book, because likely you may not have them in your toolkit. Right. I would also say that this book is for people who are not in leadership roles and for people who don't have a P&L or lots of people reporting to them. For example, it can be a book for parents who want to role model leadership behaviors for their children. Right. It can also be an opportunity for someone who is thinking about starting a career, but is in school still, and wants to figure out, what does that strategy look like for me? How do I get started designing my career? How do I do that with intention? And how do I do that based on the values that I have and the purpose that I have? And how do I align that with a company? How do I find that company? How do I find that role so that when I'm in that position, I am then doing work that I find meaningful and fulfilling, and I have purpose and I'm engaged in my work and I deliver my best work?
Right, right. Now, you are a leadership consultant, Dr. Jennifer. What is it that these leaders come to you for? What is it that they ask you? What is it that the help that they need from a consultant like you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, clients come to me with all different types of reasons why they are looking for support. You know, for example, I had one leader who came to me and he was really upset because, you know, no one on his team would listen to him. He had all the answers and he knew what to do and it was right. But nobody would listen. And so he got very upset with them. And so he would talk to me about this while we were on our sessions. And one day I said to him, you know, I'm noticing a pattern here. Is it okay if I, you know, play this back to you, what I'm seeing? And he said, sure. And I said, well, you know, everybody around you is wrong. You're the only one that has the right answer. Your way is the only right way to do this. And you get really upset when the people around you don't do what you tell them to do. I said, how do you think that comes across to your peers and your subordinates and your supervisor at work? And AJ, he sits back from the desk and all of a sudden I realized like he's crying. And I asked him, you know, what's going on? That must have hit a nerve. And he said, I just realized that the what you just described is not only the way that I am treating the people at work, but it's also the way that I am treating my wife. It's also the way that I am treating my children, who were 7 and 9 at the time. And I've realized that these behaviors aren't helping me. They're not helping me at work. They're not helping me at home. They're not helping me be a better person. I need to shift and change so that I can be the best leader I can be at work, and I can be the best leader that I need to be at home for my family, and be the best father and husband that my wife and kids deserve.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I hope that sort of a leadership, that tribe of that sort of a leadership who realizes and understands things better, that increases. And actually, we need more and more happier workplaces. And this will in turn impact, you know, bring more happiness to our houses. Because at the end of the day, whatever sort of a leader or employee you are or manager you are, at the end of the day, you have to go home. And that home has to, you know, keep giving happy vibrations for everyone.
Yes.
Right. So now, Jennifer, one more question I wanted to ask was, you talk about the duct tape approach, especially, you know, post-COVID. What is this duct tape approach? Why did leaders got to this, you know, this sort of an approach? I don't know whether it's good or bad. I need to understand it. And then we can have subsequent questions on this.
So I'm curious too about this duct tape approach. I actually haven't heard that before.
Okay. So because I was going through your profile and it was in that, so I thought maybe, you know, it is something, or maybe, you know, inadvertently it came into the profile, or maybe I read another profile. But let's look, move it. But the next, you have a look. There is something called the duct tape approach most leaders are using post-COVID, and that mm-hmm. there can be something else that mm-hmm. they can do for instead of this particular. So I guess whatever new things that that leaders are adopting, I think the simpler method is to be much more human. One thing then, how is this hybrid work culture today impacting? Is leadership changing a bit because of this flexible work culture, hybrid work culture that we are having at the moment, or is it like earlier times? Are there more expectations from leaders because of this? Because there is a lot of still debate going on whether hybrid, flexible, full-time, half-time, in office, outside office, it's almost very confusing.
Yes, you know, hybrid is the, it's almost like it's the lightning rod of today's workplace, right? So many organizations are trying to decide how do they want to handle this hybrid choice versus, you know, requiring people to come back in the office full time versus, you know, allowing people to work remotely all the time. And, you know, I actually think that there are a couple of reasons that are driving, you know, this conundrum, if you will. So first and foremost, we have companies that have purchased real estate, right? They've got buildings and they're sitting empty. And so they have this asset that they're not gaining any value from that is actually costing them a lot of money. So that is one of the pieces of this equation. I think a second piece of the equation is there is still a lack of trust for some leaders with their people. And so if they're not, if they can't see them working and they're not looking over their shoulder, then they don't trust that they're doing work and they're getting the job done, right? So there's this element of trust that is at play here as well. And I think the third element around this hybrid decision is, you know, the debate around, can we be effective and collaborate as a team if we're not in person? And I think that in some ways you can, because look at COVID, right? We all had to work remotely. We all had to figure out how to work and collaborate as a team. And in fact, employers describe productivity as higher during COVID than it was prior to COVID. So that's some logic there. And I talk about that statistic in the book of how effective people can be when we give them the opportunity to figure that out and do it in the way that works best for all of us. And we get to the common ground and get to that shared goal that we have. So I think, you know, the hybrid decision for companies is one that is going to be different. The decision will be different for each company. But I would invite leaders to think about when they're placing these guidelines on how to work and when to work, that they invite the voice of the people that are having to do the work into that conversation, right? Ask them what's going to work for them. Most likely, they're going to say some kind of arrangement where maybe I'm 2 days in the office and 3 days at home, or I'm, you know, 1 day at home and 4 days in the office, right? They will probably give you some arrangement that is reasonable. And so why not listen to them and try to adopt what they're asking for?
Right, right, Dr. Jennifer. One last question I wanted to understand is that now with the speed of AI coming into our lives, mm-hmm. and not only the use of AI, actually the fact on the ground is that a lot of people are losing their existence as positions as a worker because of AI. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, it is part. One leader cannot do anything about it. But wherever it is, at the same time when people or leaderships are trying to learn to be more human, the fact is that jobs will be getting lost. And those will continue to bring a lot of heartburn, a lot of negative news, and a lot of questions to the people who are managing the affairs, because that's the way the things are moving. Amidst all these things, how can a leader actually show the goodness when jobs are, you know, when they are actually the ones who'd be signing on those lines about the, you know, decisions that they are making because of the AI coming in? Mm-hmm. Is there room for them to continue? It is very difficult for them to take any side. Should they move forward or should they move backward? Should they become more human or should they become more stronger and look at the facts of life? Because those who lose their jobs will not actually listen to all these things. Help us understand in this backdrop, is it so easy to be human sort of a leader in these times?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, because actually my perspective on this is that AI is actually helping us be more human. And here's why. So typically in the past, when we have disruptions from a technology standpoint, there are more jobs that are created because of those technology disruptions like AI than jobs that are eliminated. So yes, there will be jobs that are replaced. There will be parts of jobs that will be changed. There will be parts of jobs that will be removed. But overall, the balance, AI will create jobs that don't exist today. So I say that AI helps us be more human, because what AI will do in the jobs that we have is take some of that transactional work, the work that can be performed by a computer or by a robot, and take that off of our plates. So we then have more space and more bandwidth in our current work to spend that time on creativity and collaboration and communication and the things that make us human. So we spend more time at work doing the things that actually make us human than not. So the second thing I will say about this is that for leaders, you know, there is a common perception out there that, oh my gosh, I'm afraid, you know, AI is going to take my job. I'm going to lose my job because of a robot, right? There's all of these perceptions going on. And what I want to say to leaders is, look, first of all, it is your job to understand how AI is shifting the work that you do. And it's your job to understand how AI is shifting the work that your people do. And then secondly, it is your job to help your people understand what will shift for them and what will be different and how to help them adapt and evolve to that so that they can be successful. So that is why I say AI is actually going to help us be more human, because it's bringing out those aspects of us that robots and machines can't replicate.
Absolutely. There is much to learn about all these things from you, Dr. Jennifer, and I'm sure a lot of people, a lot of leaders, a lot of managers would like to understand more about these things, and so and also read about all these things in your book. So what is the best way for them to connect with you?
So AJ, if they'd like to connect with me, they can go to my website, which is drjennifernash.com. That's drjennifernash.com. And there they will find a whole bunch of information about the different services that I have, some of the different clients that I've worked with and their success stories. They'll also find lots of information about the book, different workshops that they can take. And there's also, we didn't talk about this, but there's also a free assessment that they can take on my website that is related to the book. It's called the Human Leader Index. So if leaders or people listening want to understand where do they fall on the human leader spectrum, they can take that assessment and they will get a personalized report of their results that gives them their strengths and some areas that they can consider working on.
Wonderful. With this, it's a wrap on this very special edition of the KAJ Masterclass Live. Thank you so much indeed for joining us.